We are going to energize the country.
We need to wake up and smell the coffee.
No more Mr. Nice Guy.
Another future's possible, but we've got to fight for it.
Order!
Hello and welcome to the Debated Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Will. And in this episode, the second of our local election winners specials, I'm delighted to be joined by a former guest, in fact, one of the people who's been on the podcast perhaps more than anybody else, recently elected as a Labour councillor for Unsworth, Nathan Baroda. Welcome once again back to the podcast, Nathan.
Thank you very much, Ronald. Thanks for all the help you've given in giving me a profile and a platform, and I hope that plays on in my election.
Well, hopefully it was the thing that swung it for you. So the first question that I'd like to ask is, what made you decide to stand for this particular council seat?
So it's in the town in which I've grown up and lived all my life. I just wanted to give something back, really, to the community. So one of the councillors was standing down, a guy called David Jones, who's given a lot, done a brilliant job, and I thought, you know, that'd be a chance for me to succeed him and share my vision for the area with residents and speak to them and just build dialogue and help extend the Labour Party's reach within the ward and really give something back to the community, which I've gained so much from having lived down my life.
What do you think were the main sort of issues going into the campaign? Because, of course, last time we spoke to you, when you were standing initially, we didn't have the same amount of things going on with coronavirus and the pandemic that have obviously happened subsequently. Were those the kind of things that were really resonating, or were there other things that were on the agenda as well in terms of local issues like potholes, etc.?
So I think it was obviously a mix of the two. Between different people, the priorities were different. The main thing that changed since we last spoke was the vaccine. People were going to be relieved, as we all are, to be able to get the vaccine. I mean, I think the day my parents got it was just amazing, and to be able to see them get a bit of protection from the coronavirus was an amazing day. I think a lot of people associated that with the Conservatives as a governing party, just as they did with us in Wales for Welsh Labour. So that made it a bit more challenging. I remember someone said, I want to vote for the Tories because to say thank you to Boris for the vaccine. So that was an added dimension to the campaign. But equally, there was lots of local issues. And I think people want to discuss things that are going on in their neighbourhood, in their street, in their broader area. So I think that certainly resonated. And maybe that was increased because of lockdown and people became a lot more aware of, you know, going on walks within their area, meeting neighbours that didn't, well, you know, socially distanced, meeting neighbours when they're clapping, that they didn't know, that they knew. So there was that added dimension. So I think it was a very different election than it would have been 2020, had they been allowed to take place. So I think that's certainly played a factor.
Now, of course, also happening in your part of the world this year was the Greater Manchester mayoral election. To what extent do you think that the popularity of Andy Burnham helped Labour candidates in your part of the world?
Big time. I mean, Andy came up to Unsworth to campaign for me, and it was like having a rock star. It was amazing. It was like people, we stood in an area where there's a hairdresser and things. People were coming out halfway through there, getting their hair done to go and say hi to him. And people were saying things like, oh no, I always vote Tory, but I vote for you. I think a few of that, you know, a decent enough proportion would have voted down the ticket, if you like, for local Labour candidates. But equally, it's difficult to measure it because he won every ward in Greater Manchester. There were some wards in Bury that on the night we lost by 1,200. So with that considered, it's quite difficult to measure it. But I had Andy on every single piece of literature that I put out. He wrote a very nice endorsement. And, you know, we are going to work together for Unsworth, so as part of that Labour team. So Burnham was definitely a big factor in the campaign.
So going forward, obviously, you've just been elected as a councillor. What are your main concerns going forward that you want to represent on the council? Is there anything in particular that you've thought about during the campaign? Because obviously the campaign has been a longer period than it would normally have been, given the lockdown and the coronavirus, etc., that you really are passionate about implementing as a newly elected councillor?
So I think there's issues about parking that are specific to the ward, things about local parks and roads and things like that. I want to get focused on locally. I think more broadly it's about being a champion for Unsworth within the town hall, and basically saying to the council officers and members of staff and also the council leadership, you need to deliver for Unsworth. We need to get a fair deal, and we need to make sure that, you know, when things go to the rest of the borough, that Unsworth is focused on, and it might be prioritised, and that's what I'll do. So whenever there's future schemes, funding that are coming up, to make sure we get our fair share. And also more broadly, to be listening to residents for what they think our priorities should be, and ensuring that I continue to have that dialogue and that communication. So I've picked up a number of casework issues that I've been dealing with, and I picked up on the campaign. But if people have future issues, that they get in touch, and I'm a champion for them, listen to them and try and help them.
Now on the council, you're the Deputy Cabinet Minister for Environment, Climate Change and Operations. What exactly does that involve, and what sort of environmental concerns do you think there are in regards to Bury at the moment?
Sure, so it means sitting in various meetings and committees and things. I'm very lucky to be under a very effective cabinet member called Alan Quinn, who's very passionate about some of the things I am, about the environment. There's lots of things going on about tree planting. That's something that Alan's been leading on over a number of years. And we're really getting some progress on locally, so to make sure we have that, which obviously makes a big deal to the environment. Trying to encourage active travel. So that's where the operation side links with the environment side. Trying to make sure that if people want to have that, they have the opportunities to do walking and cycling. I think walking is certainly, it's gone up the agenda given lockdown, and trying to help part of the walking and cycling forum, so we achieve their aims locally. And Chris Boardman is leading that from a Greater Manchester level, which is a really exciting change. It's a very big brief. It's probably the biggest on the council. So Alan gives me freedom to pick up bits, which is great. And also, to be honest, you know, ensuring that from what goes on operationally or with environment and climate change, that Unsworth gets its fair share as well, to make sure that, you know, I'm first and foremost in the council for Unsworth.
Now, obviously, as we've mentioned, there has been a certain amount of vaccine boost for the Conservatives of late, and that was seen to an extent in the local elections. To what degree do you think that going forward that the Labour Party has to perhaps change its approach regarding the government and regarding the way that the vaccine scheme has been rolled out with? Do you think that perhaps Labour should have been more critical of the government? How do you think that they should have responded to the vaccine scheme and the support that it seems to have given to the Conservatives?
No, it's a really interesting question. And I think that what we needed to do was have a strong, consistent narrative throughout the pandemic. So been saying in, you know, May and June last year, as soon as we were getting out of the first set of restrictions, we need a plan for a vaccine. So the Labour was championing that as well, to ensure that plan and preparation was in there, because the NHS has done an amazing job, and we need to, you know, all be appreciative of that. It's made a massive difference to our country. But the first few weeks of the vaccine where we were worried about supply, we were worried about getting it, certainly distribution. So if we'd have that plan in place from June to say, here's when the over 80s are going to get it, here's the medical practice which they're going to get it, and here's what, you know, here's what's going to happen, and then that would have helped. So if Labour was seen as consistently part of that. I also think that as soon as the vaccine started to be rolled out, we should have run a bipartisan campaign with the government about vaccine take-up, about the rollout, and just been seen to be a part of that. So it's not seen as certainly a party political thing, which it isn't. The government plays its role, but it's an NHS thing. The scientists have done an amazing job on political by any means. So I think we should have worked with them in terms of the rollout, in terms of spreading awareness about the benefits of vaccines. I've been championing that for a long time before that. Ultimately, it's not, this is something that's in the national interest. It shouldn't be that difficult to do that. And that's what I feel we should have done.
In terms of the way that the results reflect on Keir Starmer's leadership, what do you think that they say about his leadership? And what do you think he can go forward with in terms of improvements to make people perhaps respond more to him and more to the Labour Party?
Yeah, I think what it shows is we need a clear and consistent message to give to activists to show our values and our policies to the voters. And I think in spite of some of the good things that he's done in the last year, that has been absent. You know, where is his policies on crime and tackling the causes of it? He might well have them. I mean, Stephen Bush wrote an article last week in which he said they have loads of policies, but they're just not communicating them. It was nice to hear, because I wasn't aware of that substance of policy. So it's primarily a communications thing, if the policies are in place, to make sure that people know about them, people are aware about them, and just be drilling home consistently about various things. I think the environment as well, I think people are appreciative of their local environment after lockdown and the pandemic and everything. So to make sure that we campaign a green recovery, and people know that's our dividing line with the government is about environmental issues. And they are trying to come onto our lawn a little bit on those issues, but I think there's always going to be a limit to what they do, because I don't think they're ambitious enough, don't think they grasp the scale of the problem. So if Labour is able to do that and continue to emphasise the importance of that, that will certainly help.
Now, of course, another disappointing result for Labour in the last set of elections was the Hartlepool by-election, which of course went to the Conservatives. Do you think that there is a discernible difference between, say, Hartlepool, which of course is in the northeast, and Manchester and Lancashire, which obviously is in the northwest, in terms of support for the Labour Party? Do you think that there is a particular reason that perhaps Labour support is stronger in Manchester and the northwest than perhaps it is in the northeast at the moment? Or do you think that the Hartlepool result was purely a result of the vaccination programme and not necessarily part of a shift away in that particular area from the Labour Party?
It's a really interesting question, but I do think that although the vaccine played its role, it is certainly part of a wider shift. And we've got to look at the challenges of seats in which we finish. We won in 2019, but the Brexit Party, Vote and the Tory combined, would be able to take us out. So that in itself is a challenge. I think it's an interesting thing about the northeast and the northwest in terms of the fact that our support has stayed more solid here comparatively. For instance, in the 2019 European elections, we had a better result here than we did in basically all the rest of the country. And some of that was a Lib Dem vote in parts of London, etc. But in North East, it's largely to the Brexit Party. So there's something interesting about the country's sort of east-west divide politically. You know, the northwest, and obviously we've seen the southwest with the West of England mayoralty. Admittedly, the Cambridge mayoralty went as well. But is there an east-west divide within the country in terms of digital politics? Something worth looking into. But potentially, I mean, some of the models that we have within the northwest, within the Labour Party, can be replicated in the northeast in terms of what we do in terms of community organising. I should hope that we can work together alongside it. So I think the interesting thing about the northeast and goes to the core of the Red Wall thesis is that a lot of those areas demographically would have been voting Conservative. If they're in the south of England, they likely would have voted Conservative for years before that, possibly since 2010. So it was almost the lifting of that cultural allergy to the Tory party over a number of years that's come to force. And we've got to try and, you know, fight against that. And to be fair, I think that cultural allergy, as I've described it, comes from a belief that the Tory party fundamentally doesn't care about those areas, doesn't care about our area here. And I think that will showcase, you know, that's not changed. They might have changed some of their rhetoric, but that certainly remains the case. And we saw that with the Free School Meals debacle last autumn, that their values are still in place, and all their communication certainly got better. Their values and their policies still remain intact.
In terms of, you mentioned the Brexit Party there, in terms of Brexit, how much of an issue do you still think it is in British politics? And do you think that, you know, on a local council level, you will have to be dealing with the repercussions of Brexit? Or do you think that it's more of a Westminster issue at the moment?
So I don't think it's really an issue on the doors at all in its own right. I think a lot of people thought, you know, think rightly so, that Brexit was done on the 31st of January 2020 and effectively haven't paid much attention to the negotiations and shenanigans since then. So almost if people are bringing up Brexit, they, you know, that would be a bit weird because it's done. Obviously, there are some complicated things that have come out since then in terms of Northern Ireland and things, but they're not as prominent an issue, certainly, as it was in 2019 and in the years before then. Where it is interesting is some of the divides that Brexit engendered still remain, but they're not Brexit-specific divides, although they do often take a similar character.
Looking forward to the next general election, what do you think are going to be the major concerns for the Labour Party in terms of not just issues specifically, but the kind of policies that you think that Labour should be putting forward at the next general election?
For me, it's about green recovery. We'll still be within the midst of the recovery in the next election. I think it'll be 2023, personally. But even if it's 24, we'll still be recovering from the pandemic because it'll take that long. So it's emphasised having green recovery, having a fair recovery. It doesn't just prioritise London and the South East and the top 1%, but it's distributed across the country. I think that emphasises care. You know, that through the pandemic, we have seen community resilience, people caring for one another, to put that right at the heart of our politics. It can often be seen as abstract, but it is tangible to local communities and social care. You know, the government's showing no willingness to tackle that. You know, I think public services will still be fighting from the, or recovering from the issues of the pandemic by the time of the next election, so making that front and centre. And also crime. I think crime is a real avenue for Labour Party to showcase what we're going to do in terms of investing in public services, because it is the causes of crime as well, but also the fact that, you know, Keir Starmer was Director of Public Prosecutions, showing that, you know, the Labour Party isn't afraid from tackling crime and making that a permanent issue. And that, perhaps more importantly, the government has got 20,000 police officers and now bringing some of those back, but it's a mirage and they don't really care about crime because it doesn't affect them. You know, they've got their anti-burglary alarms and stuff in the Tory party. So, it you know, antisocial behaviour has a massive impact on communities, and I don't think the Tory party have got to grasp with that. It's an issue where traditionally we have been behind on, but what to say that we can't shift that in the next election? But it's, you know, it's public services, it's green recovery, care, and obviously crime as well.
Now, the last time we spoke about the possibility of how the relationship would pan out between Joe Biden and Boris Johnson. There doesn't seem to be at the moment a particularly close special relationship between Joe Biden and Boris Johnson. Do you think that there is an opportunity here for Keir Starmer to engage with Joe Biden and the new Democratic administration, and through that to build more of a profile as a potential future world leader?
So I think there is historic precedent for that, for the relationship between the US president and the leader of the opposition to be strong. I think in terms of Joe Biden winning against a populist white leader provides a format for us as a Labour Party, especially the work that was going on in terms of community organising. I think that's massive. It's an underrated thing within all of British politics, but it does provide us a platform or something to parallel, and certainly that opportunity can be forged. I mean, Boris Johnson looks incredibly unserious on an international stage, and the more that's emphasised, then, you know, the better that is for the Labour Party, so certainly.
We're coming towards the end of the podcast. It's been great to speak to you, as always, Nathan. And I've got one final question. Now, as things are getting better in terms of coronavirus and the pandemic, and of course we've discussed vaccination, and things seem to be going in the right direction there, what kind of things will you be looking forward to being able to do once things are back to a certain state of normality?
Really looking forward to the Euros, watching some of the games with my friends. Hopefully getting back into the Emirates Stadium, which will be good, although the level of football at the moment isn't too good for my team. But certainly live sport will be the big thing for me.
Excellent. Thank you once again for coming on the podcast. If people want to find out more about you and potentially get in contact with you, where should they go?
Sure, I'm on Twitter at Nathan NC Baroda, and they can follow Unsworth Labour on Facebook and get in contact with me there that way. Thanks again for having me, Will. It's a real pleasure as always.
Excellent. Thank you once again for coming on.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the podcast. If you've enjoyed it, you can subscribe to us on iTunes, Spotify, Podbeam, and Amazon Music. You can also follow us on Twitter, @DebatedPodcast, like us on Facebook, Debated Podcast, and if you'd like to get in touch with us, whether about appearing on an episode of the podcast, or commenting on an episode that you've listened to, you can do so at thedebatedpodcast@gmail.com. Thank you for listening. I hope you listen to the next one.